is an extract from the Nature podcast. For the full show, go to nature.com/nature/podcast.
The Mississippi. It isn't just one of the most important words to memorise before a spelling bee. It's also one of North America's most important pieces of natural infrastructure. The Mississippi feeds into the major shipping port of Louisiana, and it has great economic value.
It's how the U.S. basically exports its agricultural products to the world.
This is Sam Munoz from Northeastern University in Boston, United States. He's been looking back at the Mississippi's history to find out more about how humans have impacted the river over time, in particular, how likely it is to flood. I spoke to Sam to find out more, and he started by giving me a bit of background about the Mississippi itself.
The Mississippi is the largest river in North America, and it's one of the largest rivers in the world. It's also one of the most heavily engineered rivers in the world.
Tell me what kind of engineering projects are being done here. How is it being modified?
On the upper part of the river, the Mississippi itself and its major tributaries, the Ohio River and the Missouri River, have dams on them. Further downstream, more in the southern United States where we did our study, what engineering has basically done is what's called channelize the river, effectively encase it in concrete to keep it from moving around. And we've also, on the lower part of the river, built levees. And again, this is in an effort to help us channelize the river and to sort of keep water when the water gets high in the river to keep it from spilling out onto the floodplain.
And flood risk was what you really focused on in this study. So what is it that you actually did?
We developed a long history of when the river flooded, when the Mississippi River flooded, and how big those floods were. And we went back 500 years.
So how do you go back and try to measure floods historically over 500 years? How do you do that?
We use two different techniques to do this, just so we could sort of independently check them. So the first is to use tree rings. And so if you have a tree that's living near the river, and it's a tree that doesn't particularly like getting wet, doesn't like getting its feet wet, we'll say its roots. When the river does flood, and it floods for long enough, say a week or two, that tree is unhappy. It gets stressed, right? It doesn't like being wet. And so the growth ring in that particular year at a cellular level shows all kinds of what my colleague calls anatomical anomalies. So that is, the cells look funny under the microscope. And so he can identify those, what he calls flood rings, right? The growth ring in that year, it looks funny. And he can identify those, and it gives us a really precise chronology over the time that tree lived when that tree was flooded. So that's one thing we did. We used trees. And the other thing we did was to use sediments, to use mud. We went to lakes that are right next to the river. These lakes, most of the time, are basically disconnected from the river. But when there's a flood and that flood is big enough, suddenly the river rises and water and sediment that's being carried by the river ends up in that lake and leave a sort of layer of coarser material at the bottom of the lake. And so what we did was we went and we collected sediment cores. And then we get a record of when floods happened in that particular place over time.
Okay, so you gathered 500 years worth of data about flood records and you laid them out in front of you. What did you see?
Floods that we get today are much, much bigger than anything we've seen in the past. We also see that the river's flooding more frequently now than it used to.
Okay, so there's an upward trend over the course of the 500 years that you were looking at. I guess the big question is, what's causing that change?
Part of that increase seems to be explained by climate. Climate has changed a little bit over this time, and so some of that increase seems to be associated with climate. But then there's this big, about 3/4 of that change is not, doesn't seem to be explainable by what we've seen the climate system do. And so what we think that is this engineering of the river that we've done.
Would the engineers that originally did these channelizations, these dams and so on, not have had an idea that this could have an impact on flooding?
The infrastructure we have was really designed in the mid-20th century. And what they did was actually take storms that had happened in the sort of mid to early 20th century and sort of project. And so our whole understanding of how much the river can flood is based on sort of a mid-20th century view of that river. And of course, that is very likely to change over the coming century. If flows are going to actually increase, and peak flows will increase under climate change over the future, is the infrastructure that we have in place now really appropriate for this future world?
Okay, so looking forward, what lessons do you think can be learned for scientists and for engineers from research like this paper that you've just done?
There's not an easy fix to fix this problem. I think that the bigger message here about this, what this study is saying, is that usually when we try to control nature, it's more difficult and more expensive than we could have imagined in the first place. And I think this is a nice example of that. And so when we, as we continue to try to, you know, sort of engineer nature, rather than trying to fight it, we might think about ways to sort of work with its natural rhythms rather than trying to impose our sort of human will on it. So I think that's a sort of bigger philosophical message, but specifically for the Mississippi, you know, that's a conundrum that there's no easy answer to.
That was Sam Munoz speaking with Noah Baker. You can read the full paper over at nature.com/nature.